know the feeling. You're trying to come up with a witty line, a clever metaphor, a song, a poem, and nothing. The harder you try, the more your brain refuses. And then hours later, inspiration strikes. Pulse contributor Avir Mitra explores what would happen if we could unblock our brain and let ideas flow.
Quan Rax, man. K-pop entertainment, you know. And we live from Chester, PA.
I've always been fascinated by the creative process.
Look, JBE, KBK, you know,
That's to say, how something unique gets created from scratch.
Listen, you run it right back.
So today I'm in a recording studio in Chester, PA with my homie K-Franchise Harris. He's the CEO of his own hip-hop production company, K-Pod Entertainment.
I see people, diamonds in the roughs, a little bit of pressure, a little bit of work, and it pays off, hopefully.
We've got three of his artists, and we're brainstorming lyrics for a new track.
Said, that's just what I picked up from that, just no freedom.
Freedom, there you go, something about no freedom.
Franchise and his team are constantly making songs, so I wanted to get his take on the creative process.
What's the key to creativity, in your opinion? How do you get good results from your artists?
I think of myself as a producer, as an inker. You know, the artist comes in and draws it, and you pretty much just trace and highlight and bring out what they already put there. And bring some depth to it, you know what I mean?
I asked rapper Quan Rax.
Walk me through how you would write a verse.
I listen to the beat, you know. I listen to a beat a couple times, you know. I let it marinate, you feel me?
What exactly happens when you let an idea marinate? What's going on in the brain? Well, sometimes the best way to understand a process is to study when it goes wrong.
There must be sometimes, I mean, and I know this happens to me, like, you'll be in the studio and you just kind of hit a wall.
That happens all the time. That's it, man.
It feels like for a hot second you're a fraud. That everything that you ever did was BS. And now everyone's going to realize the emperor has no clothes on. You know.
What do you do?
Man, I go take a break, man. I give it some time. You feel me? I can't force it.
And that's the thing about coming up with a new idea. You can't force it. It just has to appear. And no amount of practice or repetition can help. Here's the beatmaker, Dirty Red.
You know, you can sit outside and shoot 1,000 jump shots. You know what I'm saying? Maybe tomorrow your jump shot might be a little better. But you can sit in, you know what I'm saying, your bedroom and put 1,000 kick drums on your joint, you know, and don't none of them sound tight. You know, don't none of them sound how you want it to.
Sometimes it feels like the more you really need to be creative, the more difficult it is. And then once you've given up, the answer will appear out of nowhere.
It comes from everywhere. You know what I'm saying? You might be on, like he said, on the bus. You might be in the shower. Might be asleep. You know what I'm saying? And it could hit you.
What exactly is going on in the brain when you need to be creative? What stops a unique idea from bubbling to the surface? And can we hack the brain to make it more creative? These are the questions that bring me here.
Are you my subject?
Yes.
Okay, great. So if you could have a seat right here.
Okay.
I'm a subject in a science experiment.
So the first thing I'm doing is putting these pads in saline solution. That's just going to help conduct the current.
This is graduate student Lisa Muzz.
And really, the wetter, the better. You don't want any kind of burning.
But this isn't your everyday science experiment.
TDCS isn't dangerous at all, but you are putting an electrical current on the scalp.
That's because this experiment involves sending an electric current through my brain.
I'm not going to lie, I'm nervous. I'm like, okay, electrical current going through my brain.
So are we ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Okay. I'm at the University of Pennsylvania with cognitive psychologist Sharon Thompson-Schill. She's interested in the part of the brain right under your forehead, the frontal lobe.
So my group has been studying the function of the frontal lobes of the human brain for a couple of decades now. And the best way to describe the frontal lobes is that they're a lot like a CEO of a company, strategy, goal setting, goal following, things like that. They help filter information. Our frontal lobes help us prioritize what we're going to pay attention to in the world, what we're going to think about, what we're not going to think about.
Having mature frontal lobes are a huge part of what makes us human. It's the major reason we're able to control our impulses, plan our actions, filter out all the distractions, and basically not punch people in the face every time they annoy us.
And that is obviously good. So it's really good to have a CEO of a company. It's really good to have a central executive of your brain. Our interest that motivated this study was in whether there are advantages to having an immature frontal lobe.
Could it be that the frontal lobes hinder our ability to be creative? I mean, if you think about it, creativity requires a certain impulsivity. You can't be afraid of sounding crazy. You can't filter what comes in or out. You just have to let go. And having a CEO watching your every move might make that tough.
So one idea we have, and this is really, we're in uncharted territory here. When you have to think outside the box, one of the things you have to do is turn off the normal tendency you have to quickly categorize everything as a particular object with a particular purpose.
In other words, you need to turn down the frontal lobes. A quick and easy way to do that is to flood them with an electric current and temporarily shut them down. This technique is called TDCS, and that's why Lisa was taping electrodes to my skull.
Let's turn down the left frontal cortex, and we think then it's going to turn down your tendency to categorize things, and that's going to then free you to think more creatively.
Which brings us back to Dr. Thompson Shill's experiment. She divided participants into groups. Some had the TDCS going through their prefrontal cortex, and some had a fake electrode with no current at all. She showed them a common object and asked them to name the common use for them. For example, an ironing board is to iron clothes. As you'd expect, everyone did well on that across the board. But then, she asked them to come up with an uncommon use, something unique you could do with that object. Here I am running through the experiment.
Baseball bat. A crutch. You can use it as a crutch.
I should mention that the TDCS current you can hear in the background, it doesn't hurt, but it does feel strange. Kind of like licking a 9-volt battery. It even messed with the sounds of my microphone.
Screwdriver.
It was surprisingly hard.
Toothpick. Probably not, but...
They measured two things.
One was how long it took the participants to come up with a response, and the second was how many times they failed to come up with the response.
And here's where the frontal lobe, specifically the left prefrontal cortex, showed itself. The results showed that dialing down the prefrontal cortex actually made it easier to come up with a unique use for an object.
We were able to cut that failure rate in half, and we shaved a full second off that response time for the stimulated subjects.
So temporarily drowning the CEO actually freed up the brain to be more creative.
What about, I mean, I'm just picturing some day in the not-too-distant future where we could have a boardroom meeting where we all put on these helmets and, you know.
So I just like to be careful, this is what scientists do, in making really clear that there's just this one particular aspect of creative cognition that I'm talking about. That being said, there
Which is the ability to think outside of the box.
That's right, and to not be so fixated on one particular learned association or learned categorization that you have.
But there's a much bigger mystery here.
That the frontal lobes develop late, and very, very late. When I say late, you don't start to see what looks like normal cortical functioning until around age 3, and you don't start to see the frontal lobe be completely connected to other parts of the brain until around age 20 for women and, I don't know, 42 for men? No. So there's lots of uninteresting reasons why that could be. It could be, you know, some part has to be last, it just happens to be the frontal lobes. But what fueled my curiosity about this is that in non-human primates, there's so many similarities, but in non-human primates, the frontal lobes develop at the same time as other brain areas.
And the major difference between us and our primate friends? Language.
Our actual argument is that throughout evolution, there was an advantage for young humans who had a delayed frontal cortex because of language acquisition. Now, we have no data on this, so this is where I stop being a scientist and start being a storyteller. But the story is this, that language acquisition is hindered when you have this central executive in place.
Because language acquisition requires that you extract knowledge from a very noisy world. Children who have little impulse control or planning abilities are extracting much more from their environment than we are.
But I remember when my oldest daughter was maybe about a year and a half, and we were walking outside, and she said, "Plane." And I said, "No, that's a car." You know, there was a car right in front of me. And she said, "Plane," again, insistently. And then at some point, when I stopped being an insistent mother and just listened, far off in the distance, there was a plane. So what was going on there? She was just as likely to notice that plane as she was to notice the car right in front of her. Whereas for me, all of that is filtered.
In a society that puts a lot of value on the frontal lobes, maybe we should take a minute to appreciate when it's turned down.
I think it's really important that as scientists and as society, we recognize that both ends of that distribution are good. What we see is the behavior, and the behavior of people who have a revved up frontal cortex is easier to manage, it's easier to understand. You could call it better. It feels like it's better for lots of things. And so there's a tendency to want to shift everyone to that end of the distribution. And that other half of the distribution of people who have less frontal maturity, who have less of the chemicals that our frontal lobes use, they might not sit in their chair in class, they might not do their homework, you know, their employer gives them some goals, they might not meet them. And so there's this tendency to say, you know, if we could give them a drug or give them a procedure or do something to make their performance better. And all I want people to think about is that maybe there's a cost to that. And there might be some reason that having people in society that have less frontal control is actually a good thing.
For The Pulse, I'm Avir Mitra.
K-pop, you know how we do. If you don't, look us up on a YouTube. And she loving my life. Look, taking to the crib, I might change her.